a coordinated strategic approach to government-wide purchasing. That's how Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner Tom Sharp described the new category management strategy. But this new approach feels to some like a reincarnation of a plan that's been tried before. Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners and the author of the Week Ahead newsletter. He's here to share his thoughts on this and other federal acquisition issues. Hi there, Larry.
Good afternoon, Jared. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So when the Federal Acquisition Service rolled out this category management plan a few weeks back, they kind of framed it as adopting a best practice from, you know, the Fortune 500 world. Reading your newsletter from last week on this topic, you sound like you're skeptical it's going to fly in government.
Well, I think any time acquisition gets too far out in front of its customer base, whether it's commercial or federal, Jared, there's a danger that your customer may not follow where you're attempting to lead. And this is the case with GSA's category management. In the information technology arena up until the mid-1990s, for example, GSA did manage the IT acquisition category, if you will. It wasn't called that, but it's the same concept. And they were statutorily mandated to be the IT category manager until that law was repealed. But even before the law was repealed, GSA had to make substantial considerations for some of its client agencies because, in fact, they didn't want to follow where GSA was leading them. They wanted to do their own thing, and I suspect that may be the case now.
Is there a way to do it in a way that is better managed than it was in the 90s that gives agencies the flexibility they need while still getting you these kind of economies of scale that the federal government as a huge buyer is?
Oh, I absolutely think that's true. I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with category management. In fact, I think it can be a good thing properly managed. The central point, Jared, I think, is that as you referred to, it's a big government, and GSA needs to remember one size does not fit all. They have different types of client agencies that have different requirements, and so long as there's some flexibility built in so that within the category there are multiple solutions to meet those differing needs, this could be a good thing.
And one of the central ideas behind this is to assign these categories to a lead federal agency as the category manager, the way I understand it, which kind of has echoes of the training and management contract GSA announced a week or two ago with OPM as the lead manager. And I don't know if that's officially part of this category management strategy, but in that case, it makes at least some sense. There's certainly a nexus between OPM and HR services. It's harder for me to see clear, natural connections between other categories of products and services and the missions of other federal agencies. But maybe I'm just not being imaginative enough.
Well, no. In fact, GSA has traditionally shared the acquisition spotlight with agencies like the Defense Logistics Agency, and the Department of Veterans Affairs, and NASA, to name but a few. You know, those are the agencies writ large that make up the Federal Acquisition Regulation Council, and they are the ones that do a lot of the lion's share of acquisitions, along with the Department of Energy, which has some very specialized needs. So the idea of having a lead agent is not inherently a bad thing. The big thing here, as it is in any case, Jared, is communication, and that is making sure that the acquisition world's good idea is something that customers actually want to have happen and that they have bought into the concept, so that if you've got category management, there are actually things for you to manage.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think Tom Sharp said in his blog post announcing this a few weeks back that there would be six categories in all. Do we have any idea from what you've heard what sort of characters those categories will have?
Well, I think we know more, Jared, about what they're not going to be than what they are going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't think, for example, that they're going to be centered around different types of products and services. So I don't think, for example, that there would be a furniture category manager. Maybe there will be, I think it'll be more functional than that type of orientation, so that we're really talking about cross-functional, cross-category solutions that different agencies may be the category manager for. Some people in industry might call it the goal champion.
Right. Switching gears in our last couple minutes here, an item from your newsletter this week, pulling in some Bloomberg government data. Looks like professional knowledge-based services doing very well, even as the overall federal budget top line coming down. You see that trend continuing as maybe products fall off and services increase, especially those professional ones?
I do, as a matter of fact, and I think it's really a very striking figure that Bloomberg government released, Jared, where the top two categories of federal spending were both service-related. As you referred, the number one was professional services, and that really even outstrips weapon systems acquisition. So there's more spent by the federal government each year than there is on the acquisition of aircraft carriers, F-35 fighter jets, things that often get the headlines in government acquisition. And what's striking to me is not only the amount of spend around professional services, but the relative lack of attention that the rules and regulations of how we buy services as a government get.
Right.
You know, all of our acquisition rules are really still product-based, not just to the aforementioned weapon systems, but to commercial products as well. So I think those Bloomberg numbers suggest both good opportunities for contractors and, frankly, an opportunity for the federal government to update its acquisition procedures to reflect that reality.
In DOD in particular, which is where I spend most of my time paying attention to, there's a lot of rhetoric on Capitol Hill, at least, about the fact that as the civilian workforce comes down, we want to make sure that we reduce the headcount among service contractors by at least an equal proportional amount. Is that more rhetoric than, you know, implementable reality, or is that potentially going to put pressure on that knowledge-based service contract workforce?
Well, if I could just wimp out for a second and say both.
Sure. Nothing wrong with that.
Because I think there will be both. I think that you will see the contractor workforce downsize somewhat in DOD, Jared, but I also think it won't nearly be to the amount or proportion that the rhetoric makes it out to be. Nobody, for example, is reducing the missions that DOD has to meet. So while you talk to the heads of military service branches and they would like their uniformed personnel to gain more work experience, potentially doing things that are now done by contractors, there's not going to be enough uniformed military or civilian personnel in DOD to go around to meet those missions. There's always going to be an inherent reliance on contractors to do some of the work.
Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners and author of the Week Ahead newsletter. Always appreciate your insight, sir.
Have a great day.
You too.